Greetings and a bodaciously delicious hello to you from sunny Vancouver, where the action never stops, even as we change our socks. This is Tom, bringing you the April 2011 issue of Tomicide Solutions, fiendishly entitled 9 Common IT Client Acquisition Misconceptions. And I reckon you are busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, but I also hope that you can find a few minutes to listen to this month's oratory masterpiece, which I prepared with painstaking precision, and hope you find some valuable bits and bobs hidden in some nooks and crannies of this podcast. So let's see what we have in store. Besides the storekeeper himself. Are you telling me that Russians are not creative? Don't do that. They are. Just look at what happened in July 2010 on a beach on the Sea of Azov in the Cossack village of Golubitskaya in the Krasnodar region. As an impromptu advertising campaign, the entrepreneurial owners of the local parasailing company attached a donkey, a real live donkey, to a parasail and started pulling it with the speedboat. All I wanted to achieve was to attract more people to the beach so more people would indulge in parasailing. Well, that would have made good money for the folks, no doubt. Of course, as the terrified donkey started circling over the heads of the flabbergasted sunbathing holidaymakers, it started its unique symphony of blood-curdling screams. But the holidaymakers, instead of calling the cops, just grabbed their cameras and started filming and photographing the poor donkey's horrific ordeal. Eventually, the donkey landed in a rather atrocious manner by being pulled at high speed in the water. At the end of the event, the donkey was taken away for medical treatment, and the owners of the parasailing company were handcuffed and taken away. As Larissa Tuchkova, a spokesperson for the local police, noted, the donkey screamed, the children cried, and no one had the brains to call the police. It seems those parasailing guys had some misconceptions about client acquisition, just as so many IT business owners do. And it seems most of them don't have the brains to recognize that what they are doing is not working. They are doing it because the competition is doing it. And this social proof at its best or at its worst, who knows? So, if they are doing it, they say, the competition is doing it, it must be good. So we'll do it too. And based on this social proof nonsense, some of the most idiotic books end up on the New York Times bestseller list. Their authors basically give away truckloads of copies, so the books become quote-unquote successful, because lots of copies have disappeared from the proverbial shelves. The other day I received a copy of a new book from one of the internet marketing gurus. It was a pre-release offer, so I had to pay only for shipping, so I thought, hell, let's see what he's got to say. And I saw what he had to say. Nothing really, it's all fluff and bullshit, but it had become a New York Times bestseller even before its official release date. Maybe we should stay away from best-selling books. The funny thing is that the more guru bestsellers are published and purchased, the more businesses go to the wall. That's interesting. Anyway, now back to parasailing. And while the parasailing entrepreneurs thought that some outlandish image marketing would flood their business with clients, many IT business owners think that by replacing time-tested principles with silver bullets and magic potions, they can get ahead of their competitors. In the short term, it may work, but in the long run, it's pretty much doomed. Many IT companies treat planned and consistent client acquisition as a when I get around one day issue, that when I get around to it, I do it one day in the future. This behavior is fueled by the mistaken belief that if businesses build better mousetraps, then the world would beat past their doors and want to exchange their hard-earned money for whatever doohickeys those companies are selling. And when it doesn't happen, they blame the government, the tides of the seas, and other fringe circumstances. Well, it won't happen. Every single sale is the result of a consistent marketing. So let's see here some of the common and costly business development blunders. Number one, advertising is just a waste of time and a euphemism for flushing money down the toilet. There is nothing wrong with advertising per se. The process is great, it works. When it's done correctly, it works like magic. The problem is that most IT companies try to convert prospects into paying clients at the very first encounter. That is retarded. It is the same as trying to bed your date at the first meeting. Yes, it happens, but it also speaks pretty loudly about the virtues of both people. Oh, and if your date agrees to go to bed with you at the first meeting, then well, you'd better run. This is the equivalent of prospects who invite you to meetings on the very first cold call. The prospects always mean trouble down the road. Those people are just problematic in the long run. So, when is advertising a waste of time? If the advertisers don't know what they are doing, this is a problem because those who make the biggest advertising blunders scream the loudest that they are really good at advertising and the idiot can do the and that any idiot can do advertising really. It reminds me a couple of small business IT clients from the past who were in trouble financially with their businesses, but they kept calling themselves experts at this, expert at that. Search engine marketing company I worked with a while ago. The president was a copywriting genius. He was excellent at this, excellent at that. Yet the company went bankrupt and it was impossible to save it because the president was such a genius that he just didn't do anything. He spent 8 hours a day staring at his website statistics. Oh well. And it's so interesting when same these small business owners yell at, "Son, I was already in the business when you were a mere strategic plan in your father's trousers, so there is nothing you could tell me about marketing that I don't know at least a million times better than you." Oh well. This is usually the business owner's last proclamation before declaring bankruptcy. Maybe some knowledge was missing. However, when business owners have no earthly idea of how to write advertising copy, how to negotiate deals for ads, how to position ads in publications, that is really a waste of time and money and to do any advertising on the circumstances. However, when business owners have no earthly idea of how to write advertising copy, how to negotiate deals for ads, and how to position ads for publication, then it's really a waste of time and money to do any advertising. But just because you can't sail a ship, I can't say that ships are a stupid idea for transportation. It just, you don't know how to drive them. Number two, everybody knows us, so let's save our client acquisition budget. Well, is it fair to say that everyone knows Nike, Coke, or IBM? They are some of the best-known brands, yet they invest serious amounts of money in marketing and advertising. Why? to keep themselves in the forefront of their markets. Now, Hanon is your business in comparison to IBM or Coke. What would happen if IBM relaxed on the marketing activities? If Microsoft relaxed, then the open source community would take over. If Nike relaxed, Adidas would take over. If IBM relaxed, Apple would take over. So, how many competitors do you have that would like to see you dead and buried? Harsh reality, harsh question, but think about it. Do you really think you are the one and only choice for your clients and customers? If they can solve their problems without your help right now, and stop arguing, they can, then what is the chance of being selected from the endless ocean of competitors that look, feel, smell, eat, dream the same? I could say not a sausage, but maybe a tiny bit more, but not much. And being merely known means nothing really. I know Coke, McDonald's, Folgers, and Marlboro, but I'm a lifetime non-smoker who hates even the smell of coffee or colored and carbonated sugared water, and who rather dies than eats any kind of McDonald's Mac crap. So, regardless of how well I know those brands, I will never become a customer to them. So, you have to do a bit more than being known, and this is where education-based direct response marketing comes in. Yes, it's true that only 3% of your prospects are ready to buy, but it's also true that the sweetest deals come from those prospects who are not yet ready to buy. It means that for the other 97%, you can establish your company as their respected industrial authority using education-based direct response marketing. It's not free, not even ridiculously cheap, but it depends on what you're looking for to achieve. Low cost or high margin? It's ideal for high margin, high return, not low cost. Number three, our salespeople do their own prospecting. This is a rather popular but brain-dead approach. Imagine Mr. Richard Head, commonly called as Dick Head, is the president of Damas Inc., decides to save his marketing budget by condemning his salespeople to pound pavement and dial for dollars in order to make their monthly quotas. Another idiotic concept, by the way. So the salespeople spend some 70% of their time on prospecting and only 30% on selling, and a big chunk of that 30% is spent on paperwork and unnecessary meetings and busy work minutiae. I find it interesting that so many ads for salespeople specify: you must not take no for an answer. You must be able to handle rejection and verbal abuse from prospects and keep on keeping on until they buy. In my view, this is the perfect description of a serial rapist. And you, while the outcomes are slightly different, the process of traditional sales and date rape are suspiciously similar. Just look at it. Step one. Set up a meeting with the selected victim by playing down on your real intentions. Step two, meet the selected victim and bring out your big guns to get what you want. By spending the 70% of their time on real selling, that is, interacting with prospects who are pre-interested, pre-motivated, pre-qualified, predisposed to do business with you, if your company can fulfill the buying criteria supported by an effective marketing system, salespeople could easily make more than enough money to cover the company's lead generation. But Mr. Head is such a narrow-minded and short-term focused, charismatic, cantankerous curmudgeon that he focuses on how much he can save quote-unquote sale, regardless of what opportunities he loses. So he keeps losing. And what is the result? Within a year, 42% of the sales force is gone, taking some of their best clients with them and spreading the negative word about Mr. Head and his company, calling it a retarded drudgery joint, quite rightfully. Salespeople can sell and love selling, but hate prospecting. You must provide them with leads, quality leads, if you want to benefit from their full performance. They can only perform in the right environment, but in the environment where they have to hunt for each and every lead, they won't be able to operate at their best. And sooner or later, they just leave, forcing you to start hunting for new salespeople right away. And that's a pretty costly way of running a business. Just not a good idea. Number four, reason four, direct mail is just junk mail. Well, it depends on the sender. If you send junk, it is regarded as junk mail, so it is junk mail. If you send something relevant and valuable, then it's not junk mail. Granted, not everyone will respond to it, but it's still not junk. Hey, just because you turn down the waitress's offer for one more cup of coffee, it doesn't mean she's offering you rubbish. That coffee is still valuable, but by now you may be up to the top of your skull with coffee and your heart is beating in overtime, so you don't need any more coffee, which is fair enough. It's not rejection. It's not rejection on your part towards the waitress. It's not that you don't like coffee, or it's not that coffee is bad, although it may well be. But you just don't want any more. Well, it's only slowly killing poison, but well, it's socially acceptable, so people drink it. So you just make a conscious decision whether or not you want any more coffee. So it's up to you to send trash or treasure. Again, just because many IT companies don't know how to conduct effective direct mail campaigns and are too stingy to hire someone who can, the method itself is still valid and widely successful. The fact is that good mail gets opened, read, and in many, many cases responded to. Do an experiment. Secretly sneak your own and some of your close friends' names and addresses into the database. Of course, get their permission first. And upon arrival, see how you and your friends respond to the mail piece. You may be shocked when you see what sort of rubbish your company sends out behind your back. Or you may see when you see that piece that will go out, when you see it before it is sent out, when that piece, that draft goes around in the boardroom, hey guys, this is what we are planning to send out, wow, this is great, and then a few days later when you receive it, you are in a totally different mindset. Now you're the receiver of that piece, and now you're at home, and you are busy doing something else, and you just got interrupted with something. Is this piece of interruption worth of your time? That's the key. Number five, relying on word of mouth only. Imagine a guy who wants to date, but instead of going out and making connections with new potential dates personally, he relies on his previous dates introducing him to new women. So a date from 15 years ago introduces him to a friend of hers, saying, "You must meet this guy. He's the best looking dude in town and he's amazing in bed." But by now, our hero has become fat. He's a chain smoking slob who smells like a vacuum cleaner's armpits. on the top of all that, his hair is halfway gone. So when he meets her, she runs away hysterically screaming for her mother. Now imagine the same business. She's an amazing bookkeeper and her rates are only $45 an hour, let's say. But by now, 15 years later, she's actually a chartered accountant, charging $220 an hour. Well, if she's so one of those unfortunate souls who's selling her expertise on an hourly basis, but that's a different ballgame. Let's just go with the example. She charges $220 an hour. But this potential referral expects her to work for $45 an hour. None of those word-of-mouth people will do business with you due to the shock that your fees cause. Oh, and remember that in that client's perception, who got to know you as a bookkeeper 15 years ago, you are still a bookkeeper, not a chartered accountant. People just don't keep pace with your professional development. Word of mouth is only one component of your marketing. Why would you make other people solely responsible for your success in business? It doesn't make sense. Why do you ever want to depend on other people's opinions of you? Word of mouth is really just an opinion. Someone says that you are amazing and some people will do business with you on that note. But at the same time, while one group of people think you are the bee's knees, you are the best thing since sacks of potatoes, another group of people are fully convinced that you're an idiot. And there is nothing you can do about it because this is just their opinions. And it reminds me of a phrase I heard many years ago. I don't know who said it first. Like, opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one. The problem is, word of mouth creates dependency. You end up depending on other people and sit back, relax, and wait for those people to send you business. And that creates a reactive environment. And after a while, it can be pretty detrimental. Number six, the media ignores us anyway, so why play the media game? Why do you think this is the case? Just read the news section on most IT companies' websites. It's all about blatant self-aggrandizement, about the number of awards they managed to conjure up or other trivia that the president of the company is a New York Times bestseller author or other ridiculous facts. I mean, it's important to the company, but not for the marketplace. Would you want to read about other people's drumming on their own chests, shouting, we are the best, we are the nicest? And retarded buzzwords like quality, integrity, and service, well, who the cricket cares about such platitudes anyway? So if you want to work with the media, then you have to have something worthwhile to say above and beyond the normal chest pounding. There can be many things in your company that are actually relevant to your market, thus could be published in trade publications. I would encourage you to stay away from general newspapers. It's the general public that reads general newspapers, but in the long run, you're better off with very targeted media efforts. You get better return on your investment. So after the publication, let's look at the topics. Looking at things from the same perspective always produces the same results. So if your current, maybe somewhat self-centered media appearances don't produce the desired results, then change the approach and switch to something more client-centered. So instead of writing about what your company does or what's happening inside your company, write about what your target market and the specific clients have achieved as a result of working with your company. So talk about impact and value, not about activities that are happening inside your company. Put yourself into your prospect's shoes. What will you be looking for as a buyer? Information on sellers or information that is relevant to the issues you are grappling with on a daily basis? I reckon it's the latter, at least at the beginning of the buying cycle, once you made up your mind based on the information you've received, what you want to buy, then you start selecting the seller. And this is the interesting part. It's just pure psychology. Whoever bothers to educate you is likely to become the seller. It's that simple. Number seven, we are just a small company. Marketing is for giants. The other side of this sad story is that we are just a small company and making profit is only for giants. Small companies are supposed to be merely scraped by and barely stay out of bankruptcy courts. It's like saying that education is only for educated people or physical exercise is only for fit people. Yes, but if we realize that we can't get into PhD school straight from kindergarten, we also understand that there must be a starting point. You have to start taking your message out to the market on a small scale, monitoring the results and tweaking the process for better results. But not in a spaghetti marketing style that you throw a huge marketing budget to the wall and whatever happens, happens. And if not enough sticks to the wall and produces results next year, you throw more money. So let's give that privilege to the giants. They live by throwing more and more money to the wall, year after year, less and less sticks, so they keep throwing more. Former Apple marketer Guy Kawasaki has made a comment about this lunacy of wasting money on chasing after the market. He said, "If you have more money than brains, then you should focus on outbound marketing, chasing after the market. But if you have more brains than money, you should focus on inbound marketing, basically magnetically attracting the market to you." Also, once all large companies started out as small companies, and as a result of good marketing and business development, they gradually have become large companies. So, marketing is a business function, just like accounting or even cleaning the toilets on your premises. These functions have nothing to do with the size of the company. They just have to be done because any company that operates as a business has to have marketing. But without constant marketing, you will never be able to become a big company. And by big, I mean blazingly profitable, not merely big in headcount. The way I see it, a 10-person IT consulting firm that produces $1 million revenue per employee is a bigger company than a 1,000-person company that produces 200,000 revenue per employee. So by big, my interpretation is revenue per employee or profit per employee. And to this, I would also add that a 1,000-person company is more than 100 times harder to manage than a 10-person company. So yes, based on gross revenue, the 1,000-person company produces much more. But on a net profit basis, the 1,000-person company doesn't even come close to the small 10-person company. Many owners of smaller IT companies, driven by this marketing for giants notion, end up spending their life. Many owners of smaller IT companies, driven by this marketing is for giants notion, end up spending their lives spinning their wheels and throwing more and more sand into their eyes, making their visions more and more blurry and their journeys more and more painful. Imagine marketing and sales as a continuum. Marketing is the process of building momentum, which climaxes, quote unquote, at the point of landing new clients and then building those transactions into long-lasting, mutually beneficial relationships. Also, let's remember the words of Peter Drucker in Management Tasks, Responsibilities, Practices book in he wrote in 1974. There will always, one can assume, be need for some selling, but the aim of marketing is to make selling superfluous. The aim of marketing is to know and understand the I customer so well that the product and the service fits him and sells itself. Ideally, marketing should result in a customer who is ready to buy. All that should be needed then is to make the product or service available, i.e., logistics rather than salesmanship, statistical distribution rather than promotion, selling harder, simply just by hiring more salespeople and hitting the roads is not the best solution, not the most intelligent solution. And although I've been repeatedly beaten up on sales forums for the above comment that with good marketing you can scale down on your sales, I still maintain that you're better off in terms of profits, brand recognition, by beefing up your marketing than merely hiring more salespeople. Number 8, for our target market, price is the most important factor. It is if it is what you're communicating to your market, then your market positions you accordingly. People who buy at Walmart, for those people, price is the main concern. They don't care about quality. They go to Walmart because Walmart promotes low prices. So people who are looking for low prices go to Walmart. But there are people who are looking for quality and quality of the product, quality of service. They don't go to Walmart because they know they won't get quality at Walmart because Walmart is not famous for its quality. Walmart is famous for low prices. So by contrast, if you promote value, then your market positions and brands you through that value as a premium caliber company. I've read some studies over the years that indicate that only about 6% of all lost sales are lost on price, and most of the other 94 is lost on the salesperson incompetence. And by incompetence, I also mean to be a typical salesperson. Today, buyers don't want to talk to salespeople. They want to talk to subject matter experts with industry-specific business savvy. Just imagine if you know if someone in your family needs some kind of surgery and you book an appointment with the clinic. And then a guy comes out in a polyester suit. Okay, let's sit down. Let's discuss your need. Who are you? Well, I am the salesman for this clinic. So you're not a doctor. No, I don't know anything about medicine. All I know where to go to get some Tylenol when I have a headache. Oh, so you're not really a medical expert. No. Then why should I talk to you? Silence, because there is no reason. With the internet, by the time the buyer meets the seller, the buyer, through the internet, information, white papers, etc., is pretty well educated on what's available on the market, at what price. So buyers know their options. They can't be bullshitted. That's why they don't want to meet salespeople, they want to meet experts. So if your target is retail, for example, retail stores, you'd better be intimately familiar with the retail industry's key performance indicators. Indicators like sales per square foot, sales per hour, or time spent in the store. These are the terms retail executives use in the boardroom. And in order to meet boardroom caliber people, we have to speak their language. So instead of dropping your prices, tweak your lead generation system to screen out price shoppers. Just a hint, price conscious people don't buy Ferraris, and those who buy Ferraris don't expect low prices. And it's not because Ferrari screams to the world that we are the most expensive, we are bloody expensive, we have the highest prices. No. Ferrari has built its brand over the years. People have established in their minds, in their perception, that that brand must be bloody expensive. So instead of thinking about discounts, think about how you can improve the way of presenting the value of your solutions. Number nine, our sales are already growing. Why waste money on marketing? This comment reminds me of the last words of General John Sedgwick at the Battle of Spotsylvania in 1864. They couldn't hit an elephant at this dist. And at that moment, before finishing his sentence, a Confederate sharpshooter's bullet hit the general in the left eye. And very soon the Union Army had a very dead General Sedgwick to deal with. He was the highest ranking Union general to be killed in the war. The nob. Empty bragging is not a good idea. Your sales are for now. Marketing is about investing in the future, engineering the future, making sure that your sales keep growing. Marketing today will create a steady stream of clients tomorrow. So it's not an overnight process, it's a long-term view. But look at what most IT companies do. In order to increase sales, they hire armies of salespeople with the general average attrition rate of 42%. And then with no or barely minimum subject matter expertise and business savvy, these salespeople go out cold calling, pounding pavements, breaking through no solicitor signs to make their quotas. Then they get burnt out or just plain pissed off because there is no support from the company, only retarded demands, so they leave for the competition. So while most IT companies can say their sales are increasing as the years go by, only a handful can say that their net margins or even net margin per employee is increasing. So in spite of the great management fads, most IT companies' existing performance is a far cry from the potential, what they would be capable of. So never mind whether or not your sales are growing. Are your profits growing? This is the question here. How much of what you make can you actually keep? Number 10. Business development folks must be 100% certain about who exactly your potential clients are. However, as the market changes, it's important to keep pace with those changes. Unfortunately, only very few IT companies do that, and this can be your advantage. create a perfect client profile, including perfect company and a perfect buyer profile that includes demographics, psychographics, even technographics, basically the general technical aptitude of that market. And here I also have to warn you about marketing research. You have to consider two major factors. One is the Hawthorne effect, which basically states that people behave differently when being observed, researched, or surveyed from how they behave in normal life. In surveys, they may tell you how much they are interested in your stuff, but when push comes to shove, they are even more interested in keeping their money instead of investing in your stuff. One example, taste test after taste test, something called the Royal Cola comes out at the top as the best tasting cola. The second is Pepsi, the third is Coke. But in real life, Coke is the business, second is Pepsi, and this Royal Cola is virtually unknown. So, what is the difference? Survey and real life. In taste tests, people are tasting sips of cola. In real life, people are drinking buckets of cola. So there's a difference. There's a huge difference in consumption. The other phenomenon is what's called the participative universe principle, which says that researchers find what they are looking for. For example, Kentucky Fried Chicken in the 90s. Researchers concluded that there was high demand for healthy, low-calorie food options. According to research, people wanted it. Realistically, people wanted to buy quantity, not quality. People who go to Kentucky Fried Chicken don't care about quality. They want to eat buckets and buckets of fries and chicken. They don't really care about how unhealthy or how substandard that stuff is. The other example, in 1943, Thomas Watson, the then chairman of IBM, spent a small fortune on hiring a prestigious consulting firm to research the computer market. So then the consulting firm concluded that there is need only for a few computers. Now we know better. Yes, erring is human, but erring so much is research. Most people in my clients' marketing department spend the majority of their time observing their markets and learning more about them. They read their trade publications, they attend their conferences. And as their sales departments are shrinking, which is a good sign, their marketing departments are growing. And marketing's jobs are observing the market and creating unique and valuable content for the changing markets. And it seems to work. So instead of wasting your time and money on excessive research, just observe and pay attention to what's actually happening in your market. Take hard evidence with a grain of salt and pay more attention to soft evidence. Remember, soft evidence is from the real world, whereas hard evidence is merely a hypothetical or documented academic mishmash. We all remember the McKinsey maxim, what you can't measure, you can't manage. Well, that's all well and good if you are digging ditches, but in the knowledge economy, you can't measure knowledge. But at the end of the day, knowledge matters. That's all. So this what you can't measure, can't manage, is totally nonsense. For example, we know that people are getting more and more allergic to receiving cold calls. Yes, I've seen some recent research documents indicating that buyers are more and more receptive to receiving cold calls. Now, is it more allergic or more receptive? No matter what the research says, we know the answer is more allergic. And we can toss the research. So, on summary, as you can see, client acquisition is an important cornerstone of every successful IT company. Many business owners ignore it even when they realize that the alternative is sheer backbreaking grunt work selling. Their people end up pounding pavements and dialing for dollars non-stop. Hell, you have to sell your stuff either way to turn it into money, but when you have an automated business development system, then you can sell more stuff at higher margin and with fewer staff and with less effort and money wasted. So the way I see it, there are three ways to increase your sales. Increase the profit generated from each client. Oh, this is in the order of importance in my view. Increase the profit generated from each client. One, increase your fees and prices. The second, increase your lead to sale conversion, more new clients, and increase the generated leads, more new prospects. The first one, number one, gives you the high margin. Number two gives you more clients. And number three gives you more prospects and, well, more headaches. Yet, most IT companies focus on prospecting to create more interest, but a large part of the interest comes from tire kickers, so-called interest. One more point, the earlier in the buying cycle you connect with buyers, the longer the cycle will be, but the more those buyers are willing to pay for your solution. So consider the three stages of the buying cycle. In the early stage, buyers know the symptoms they are suffering from and are looking for solutions. They are in education mode and are open to listening to experts. They are open to considering several feasible options just to solve their problems. And they are willing to consume huge amounts of relevant and valuable information to find what they are looking for. In the middle stage, buyers have their eyes on certain solutions, but they are still pretty flexible to look at other compelling options. But they are no longer willing to plow through reams of documents, no matter how relevant that information is. And in the late stage, buyers are ready to buy. This is about 3% of the market. They have their purchase orders approved, signed, budget allocated, everything is on track. By the time buyers reach this stage, they become very narrow-minded. They are cocksure of their choices, and now they are looking for the biggest bang for their bucks, in many cases, the lowest price. They issue RFPs and let the bidding madness start. Many of them also want to see obscene amounts of references and testimonials. So, using education-based direct response marketing, the sooner you connect with buyers in the buying cycles, the higher margins you will make. And this requires smarter marketing, not just more salespeople pounding pavements and dialing for dollars. Because if you do that, you can easily become just another sales martyr of the free world. So what do you think? Running a business is not about martyrdom. It should be a form of self-actualization, as we've learned it from good old Abraham Maslow. So think about it and look into your own business development. Where can you tweak it? Where can you improve it? Which part can you automate? Which one can you better humanize? So these factors. And then with some luck, if I live that long, we talk in April. In the meantime, have a great week, month, have a nice Easter, and